Oh, hello there. Welcome to another episode of The Leftovers. I am your host, Jason Rantz, but you knew that already. This is the show after the show, the podcast after the show, where we just keep talking and talking and talking some more. There was quite a lot of stories that we did not get to. One was incredibly disturbing, and I almost don't know what to make of it, because obviously this doesn't happen all that often. A girl in Michigan had a contaminated Wendy's meal, apparently, and it left her with permanent brain damage, according to a lawsuit. Now, this was from a Jennison, Michigan franchise. The mother, Joy, is suing this particular operator, Meritage Hospitality Group, because according to the lawsuit, they failed to ensure proper food safety protocols were practiced at this location. It led to an E. coli outbreak in July of 2022 that the lawsuit claims caused her 11-year-old daughter, Aspen, to really, really suffer. The attorney told Fox News Digital, quote, "To see the drop-off in her abilities and the damage that's done to her brain that's irreversible, it's really, really hard on everybody. It hit me so hard imagining what I would do and how I would feel if this were my child, who went from reading above her grade level to two grades below from one year to the next and going from a 70th percentile score in math to the 9th percentile." Aspen went to Wendy's for dinner on the evening of August 1st, 2022. This happened after her softball practice. She ordered a biggie bag meal that apparently includes a hamburger, chicken nuggets, and French fries. Days before that, according to the lawsuit, there was a shipment of romaine lettuce that was contaminated with E. coli that ended up getting shipped not just across various Wendy's in the Midwest, but specifically ended up in this particular location. The CDC said they were able to trace it to 109 E. coli infections across six states. 67 of the cases were in Michigan. On July 27th, days before Aspen ordered her biggie bag meal, the Ottawa County Health Department officials visited the Jennison Wendy's and conducted an inspection that resulted in 17 health code violations at the franchise location, according to the lawsuit, per Fox News. The store closed temporarily to address the violations, to clean the restaurant, and then they reopened. Now, Aspen didn't eat any lettuce in her meal, but she felt ill with nausea, abdominal pain, fever, diarrhea. Her mother ended up taking her to urgent care 2 days later, and they did that because this girl, who was just 11 years old at the time that this happened, her symptoms were getting worse. That's when they realized that she was suffering from a E. coli infection. Now, the Meritage Hospitality Group told Fox in Michigan a statement, via statement, "We take the health and safety of our customers very seriously, and that they denied any wrongdoing or failure of its food safety practices in these cases. Beyond that, they're not going to comment," which is normal when you're in the middle of litigation, you don't comment. Now, the lawyer said, "There's a misconception as far as the incubation period for this kind of bacteria. It's important to know that Aspen's infection was a particular part of this outbreak. Hers was included by the CDC as part of this E. coli outbreak. Even though she didn't eat the lettuce, she still got sick because of the unsanitary conditions and blatant disregard for basic safety practices at this restaurant." Now, obviously, I have no clue what happened here. No clue. I don't know who's right. I don't know who's wrong. It certainly seems like a compelling case from the girl, but like I said, don't know. But I certainly believe the idea that there aren't very many employees who might be thinking about like top of the line sanitation at these restaurants, whether we're talking about a fast food restaurant or anywhere else. And I say that because I know that you and I don't have that kind of sanitation that we would expect probably from restaurants, but we're okay with it in our own kitchens because it's our own food, it's our own bodies making it. And weirdly, we kind of have a lower standard, it feels like, at least. Now, maybe there are some exceptions out there, but I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, which was a statement I said on the show, I got to stop saying. But the fact is, I don't really trust the health and safety standards of any restaurant for the most part. And yet I'll still eat there because the chances of something like this happening are very, very, very slim, but they do happen. And that's why I didn't quite know what to do with a story like this, other than should I be more freaked out than I normally am when I see stuff like this? Because we always assume that it's not going to happen to us. I have to imagine that Aspen and her mother always assumed they would not be, you know, victimized in a way that they allege. We never think it's going to happen to us until it happens to us or someone we know, someone we love, someone we hate. And then, bam, it opens our eyes just a little bit as to the possibility. It's kind of like we say this all the time on the show. You can be walking home from work. You can be walking across the street and you get hit by a bus and die. Could just happen. Well, same thing with E. coli. You could just happen to go to a fast food restaurant or any restaurant at exactly the worst possible moment, order the worst contaminated or the most contaminated food, and then bam, all of a sudden you get sick and you ultimately die. Now, in this case, she doesn't die, thank God. But you get my point. Meanwhile, I was on with Guy Benson talking about the crime crisis, among some other topics. Here's how that went.
Yesterday, there was an interesting decision made by Trump and his team. He was, of course, in New York City for this trial, and they are in the middle of jury selection, as we were mentioning in the last hour with Mark Thiessen. And after they adjourned for the day, Trump went up to Harlem, and he went to that bodega. You might remember this story. We covered it here. We talked about it. There was a bodega up in Harlem where this convicted criminal showed up with an accomplice and tried to rob the bodega. And in the process, you had this guy and his accomplice trying to, if I recall correctly, stab the clerk, a man named Jose Alba, who then fought back and killed one of these people in self-defense. And Alvin Bragg, in all of his wisdom, that office in New York, the district attorney, they decided that this was murder. And they slapped the clerk with murder charges. And they sent him to Rikers. The guy was behind bars for a while. Then there was a big uproar and an outrage over this, quite rightly, because this man, there was video evidence, clear-cut self-defense in a city that too often feels lawless. And they were punishing, persecuting the innocent party, a bodega clerk who happens to be Hispanic. And under pressure, finally, they dropped those charges. Trump went to that bodega yesterday, which I thought was just such a smart move because he can't really travel very much given the trial schedule. Part of that, I think, is, you know, by design and all of this. But here was an opportunity to highlight a crime problem, to highlight failed policies in a place like New York City, to stand in solidarity with victims, and to point out the totally screwed up priorities and decisions of Alvin Bragg, who seems to be more interested in letting real criminals off the hook in a lot of ways and downgrading their charges than going after the criminals in an aggressive way. And his office initially turned the criminal into the victim in that case. And if Trump is trying to build a case that Alvin Bragg is way out there, wrongheaded, go down the list, showing solidarity in person at that bodega, I think that's a smart move. And he was like, you know, whatever you think of Trump, and I have huge problems with him, he's kind of charming. He's like, oh, look at this young guy. You're going to be a movie star, good-looking guy, and just talking with this person. And actually, Trump's reception up there was pretty glowing from a lot of people in an area that you would imagine Trump might not be Mr. Popular. Well, he has fans up in Harlem. Joining us now is Jason Rantz, host of The Jason Rantz Show, KTTH in Seattle, our great affiliate. You should buy his book, What's Killing America. Jason, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So you just heard me talking a bit about that little small jujitsu move from the Trump camp yesterday, using the time that they had to go and show a certain, you know, priority and a certain emphasis that they want to place on certain issues related to Alvin Bragg and otherwise. I think that was pretty clever.
I 100% agree. I mean, that was a brilliant move. The problem is, of course, you're not going to have many media outlets on the left actually cover what happened and play what happened. You're going to get some coverage, of course, within communities that I think really do care about this outside of just conservatives. I mean, there was in the New York Post article, they were quoting some guy who's there. He said he's originally from Yemen. He's never voted before, but this time he's actually going to vote because he looks at Donald Trump and says, okay, this is a tough person who's actually going to take on this issue. This is an issue, crime specifically, that is really, really, really important. And it's because they're being told over and over and over again that there's not really a crime issue, that there's nothing going on, everyone relax, everyone sit down. But they understand that, number one, that's obviously not true. And number two, it's no longer just like a crime problem or a public safety issue. This is now a political issue because of political decisions that are being made that allow people to stay out on the streets who need to be locked up. A criminal justice system that is choosing in New York, to your point, to go after the guy who defended himself. And that is just completely backward. And people know what's going on. People are aware of what's happening in their own neighborhoods. And they are very clear as to which party is responsible. You know, Democrats are very good at branding. And they branded themselves around this very effectively. And now they're regretting it.
Yeah. And it also goes to the way that Alvin Bragg pursues his responsibilities and his duties and mm-hmm. the types of people he goes after and doesn't. And that also plays into a parallel narrative that is also something Trump wants to talk about. So I really think that was clever, brilliant, whatever word you want to use. This was a good use of the president's time yesterday, given some of the restrictions that he has on his schedule and his movements yep. these days because of this, I think, obviously politicized trial in Manhattan. So I just wanted to highlight that happened yesterday. But it also plays into an analysis that you've written, Jason, that I want to sink our teeth into together here about crime and the reduction in certain crimes, murders, for example. The new stats are out. Murders are down. Homicides are down. That is true statistically. That is obviously good news across a lot of these major mm-hmm. cities. And leftists are saying, aha, the right-wing talking point is expired. They don't want to give credit because they want to pretend that there's a crime crisis. But look at these significant down by double digit percentage murder rates. This blows up one of their big arguments heading into the election. Your response to that is what?
Well, my response to that is actually pretty simple. Answer some simple questions like, why is it going down? Which is a very simple question with a very simple answer. The cities that had the decreases in homicide are the ones that turned around the BLM-inspired pieces of either legislation, the strategies, the initiatives, the cities that refunded police, the cities that decided to put bad guys in jail. Those are the ones that are seeing the significant decreases in homicide. And I'll give you an example. So you've got Washington, D.C., which hit a 20-year high homicide number last year. Well, yep. Now they're down about 25% or so. That's not because the criminals all of a sudden said, oh, I'm going to reform myself. I'm going to get on the right path. No, it's because they put a renewed focus on law enforcement. The D.C. Council just passed a massive crime bill. It reversed a lot of the policies that led to the homicide rate to begin with. They created an anti-loitering law. Really, they revived it from the early 90s to create these drug-free zones that allowed them to go into these neighborhoods and make arrests when people are actually breaking the law. They created a new category for organized retail theft. So they're saying, we're not just going after the homicides, we're going after all of these other crimes that are all, at the end of the day, interconnected. And they have seen a significant result because of it. Philadelphia saw a 37% decrease in homicides. Well, what exactly did they do? Guess what? They increased policing in the districts in North Philadelphia where they were having the most crime. So in other words, they didn't defund the police. They didn't de-police. They actually put more police officers on the streets where they needed to be. And
right,
bam,
they did,
you start to see
they did
results.
What? Yeah, that's, I mean, they did what conservatives said needed to be done in a lot of these places, and the results have now started to roll in, and the results are positive because this is like tried and true. This isn't just some debate about, okay, what really works. It's clear what really works. And the places that are doing more of what actually works and reversing the insanity that we saw in 2020 and beyond, they are seeing, they are reaping some of those benefits now. There's another side of this, though, Jason, as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we still have a very serious crime problem in this country, especially in a lot of our cities. Maybe not on homicides, but on sort of pettier, lower-level crimes, where in many cases they just don't get even reported, right? The crime is so prevalent,
correct,
a lot of people don't bother calling the police because the police don't have the resources to actually investigate anything other than major crimes like, you know, violent felonies, you know, homicide specifically. So there's a whole, like, underclass of criminal and a whole underclass of crime that is still massively elevated, and there's, like, this built-in baseline of expectation of lawlessness that people still feel because it's real, point one, and I want to get your reaction to that. And then the second point that is, I think, related to this is if you look at the numbers compared to last year where and the last few years where all these problems have spiked significantly to decades-long highs, you can get pretty dramatic reductions. But when you – I would like to see the analysis. This is another pretty simple question. I would like to see the comparison of the reduced numbers now. Again, that's better than it was last year. But compare it not to, you know, psycho times. Compare it to the before times. Compare it to 2014 or 2018, or give us a baseline before the world went mad in 2020. I think those are the comparisons that are more significant than year over year on these highly, you know, elevated crime levels.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And when you make the comparison to 2019, pretty much across the board, you're still seeing it elevated. And that's what I mean when I say that people kind of know what's going on. When you tell them crime is down and they don't believe you, and then Democrats will say, see, look, I just compared today to last year's record high. Well, it's very difficult to get record highs over and over and over again. At some point, you're going to see a little bit of a dip. But at the end of the day, they remember what life was like just a few years ago.
Well, and actually, Jason, it's like inflation, where they're like, well, the inflation rate isn't as high as it was. But people are like, but we remember what things cost 4 years ago. That's the problem on inflation for the Dems and for crime. Jason Rantz, KTTH, our proud affiliate in Seattle. Check out his book, What's Killing America, on a lot of these themes. Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don't forget, the Guy Benson Show is heard weekdays from noon to 3, right before my show on KTTH. I hope you'll give it a listen. It's a really great show. Speaking of giving it a listen, you just did that to The Leftovers, and I am grateful, and I will see you tomorrow.